I want to share with you today a chapter in from the Sefer Mo'adim L'Simcha by the author of this set is Rabbi, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Tuvia Pei Resh Yud Yud Nun Dalet. What? Freed. No. Freund. I have Tuvia Freund. I'm embarrassed. I don't even know his name. I have all of his, many of his Sfarim. They're fantastic Sfarim. He has here a fantastic chapter about the Zohar. We're still in the shadow of Lag BaOmer. Okay, Lag BaOmer was only 2 days ago. Today is 35, only 2 days from Lag BaOmer. And in fact, we're in the week of Hod. We're in the week of Hod. The whole week. It's the whole week of Hod.
What? This is at the end.
This is now Malchus Shabbat. This is the end of Hod.
This is the last day.
The last day of Hod. Okay, so we're still the tail end. The tail end of Hod. We're still the tail end of Hod. So it's still.
What's this thing with Hod? Why is it any better than the other
Sfiras? I have no idea. So I'll tell you one idea. I'll come to one idea about what Hod. I'll tell you one idea about Hod. I'll tell you about two ideas. I heard an interesting idea. Right, we'll go one thing at a time. But I just want to discuss that today, in our day and age, in the last couple of years, Lag BaOmer has been hijacked by Rashmi. He's not going to like me saying that. But when we all grew up, Lag BaOmer was a day. We all knew Lag BaOmer was a day. What's the significance of Lag BaOmer? It's a day when the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. It's a day to focus on, to give kavod to your friends. The reason why Talmidim died was Shloi Nohago kavod ze laze. So if Lag BaOmer is a day when the Talmidim stopped dying, that means it's a day to focus on kavod abrios. It's a day to focus on what it means to appreciate who your friends are, to appreciate your family, your abeim, your friends, your family, to give kavod to your family and friends. However, in the last number of years, that somehow has taken gone to the back burner. And the primary reason that we celebrate Lag BaOmer is because it's a day when the Zohar was revealed, when Rashbi supposedly died on this day, which many people question if that's really true. Rashbi's Patira took place during this period of time, and upon his death he revealed Sisrei Torah, which was supposedly captured in the Zohar, the work that we know of the Zohar, and the Zohar was hidden from man for over 1,000 years, and somehow, I know you probably know a lot about this, somehow the Zohar appeared on the scene about 1,000 or 1,500 years since it was written. And we have emuna that it was authored, or I don't know if it was actually authored, but it was the essence. The ideas were put into these words. Whether he actually wrote it, not well, there's always very complicated. It's not just his work. I was discussed, there are 14 parts to the Zohar. And not everything from what we call the Zohar came from Rashbi. It preceded him in other Kabbalistic works. Okay, so this is the one just to run through. It's a very long chapter. It has a lot of information. I just spent the time that I had trying to just cover some ground, just to capture a few ideas. Now, the first thing we have to acknowledge is that today it is impossible for any person not to be influenced by the work of the Zohar. I'll give you a mashal. Havdol elef alfei havdolos. I remember a couple of months ago, there was, you all know the magazine, The Jewish Action, published by the OU. There was a fascinating article written by a Orthodox Hollywood screenwriter. Anyone remember his name? I don't remember the articles. A long time ago. There's an Orthodox screenwriter, Hollywood. He wrote a very popular movie. I don't know. He wrote a few movies, some that deal with Orthodox Jews. I don't remember all the details. But one thing I remember really sticks out in my mind is he wrote that no matter what kind of head covering you wear, whether you wear black borsellino, or you wear a kippah struga, or anything in between, or any other extreme, he writes, it is impossible for you not to be under the influence of Hollywood. Because Hollywood plays such a central role in defining the culture of America, and for that matter, the world. It has it has breached all barriers and has crept into every person's life in this world, whether you realize it or not, and Orthodox Jews are no exception. And he talks about it, and it's very obviously, it's very tragic, because the values of Hollywood are certainly connected 100% Kol HaTorah Kula, pretty much. So he talks, he speaks about this idea in his article. And the same way that's true, unfortunately, in a bad way, with regard to our culture and the values of the secular world, which are very much, they're rooted in Hollywood, lahavdil elif alfei havdalos, Zohar is something that the average one of us stays far, far away from. We don't know it, we don't know from it, we don't even want to know from it. But yet, it is impossible for every Orthodox Jew living today not to be under the influence of things that are written in Zohar. Now, for example, in the tefillah, I mean, there are certain sections of tefillah which are chunks of Zohar. Berich Shmei. Berich Shmei, we say when we take out the Sefer Torah, it's a beautiful, beautiful tefillah. If you know the words, about Ma'akasha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shagreda, Siyata, the Shmai, and learning Torah, and all the different brachas, and those who daven Nusach Sfard Friday night, there's a beautiful tefillah called Kegavna. And there are also snippets of Zohar here and there in the Nusach HaTefillah every so often. We have the brach of the tefillah under the Koach, Lus Hashem, under the Koach. No, that's not Zohar, but he preceded the Zohar. That he was a Mekubal. He was a very big Mekubal. One of the major works of Kabbalah came from him. And that tefillah also is really rooted in the works of Kabbalah. Now, the essence of the Zohar is stringencies, believe it or not. The Torah in Shulchan Aruch is very straightforward. Almost everything is a mutter. And that may be a little bit not hard to believe, but pretty much there are certain rules, there are certain things you can do and you can't do, and you follow the Shulchan Aruch, and everything is fine and good. The Zohar has impressed upon Klal Yisrael, the work of the Zohar has impressed upon Klal Yisrael, that not everything that appears to be permitted is really mutter. In other words, a person can be a novel Birishus Hatar. You can go live your life and fulfill every single rule in Shulchan Aruch, and you're living worse than the worst guy in the world, the biggest lowlife in the world. It's possible, it's theoretically possible to fulfill every law in the Torah and be a novel Birishus Hatar. The Zohar has added flavor to Shulchan Aruch by bringing out, by making us sensitive to the sanctity of the Torah, which has resulted in adding many layers of stringencies, which are not halacha, but which are expressed in the form of custom and just the way that we live. Like tznius, all the things that we read about in the newspaper, and tznius, and lashon hara, and... Okay, I don't have really good examples, but every fast of our lives, all these things, every fast of our lives, we are sensitive that when we do a mitzvah, we do an avera, we are affecting things that are way beyond us in the other world and will have repercussions and consequences for us later in our own lives and in the next world and for our children and grandchildren, so on and so forth. So we don't even realize how subconsciously we live, even consciously we live with a sensitivity to the kedusha of the Torah and the mitzvos, which primarily comes from the Zohar. One very big mystery, which after reading this chapter, really makes me wonder: how did the Rambam and how did the early Rishon, how did they live? What kind of lives did they live? Because the Rambam didn't know from the Zohar. The Rambam and the Kadmonim, the early Kadmonim, there was no Sifrei Kabbalah at all. It didn't exist. It was completely hidden. Rashbi died. Rashbi, we have a tradition. He left over the Zohar, but it was not revealed to the world for at least 1,000 years. It was not discovered. Different versions of when it was discovered. One version was discovered in Meiron, in a cave in Meiron. It was dug up by Arabs, and they took and they found paper, Gvaldi. They opened up, they found a scroll, Matayim Manon. They now had some paper they can sell spices in. And they took the Zohar, and they put in spice, and they went to the market and they sold spice. The person came along and he purchased some spices, and he opened up the wrapping paper and he saw some writing, and he realized this is something very special. And then he made an investigation. He realized that this came from a certain merchant who found this scroll in a cave and was using this as wrapping paper for spice. And he went through great effort to retrieve all of these papers, and he put together the Zohar. That's one version. Another version was that they found the Zohar buried in a cave by a secular king in the Far East. I don't even know where this is. And this king was very curious, what is this? And he asked all of the wise men of the community and of the civilization, and no one knew what it was. And they said, why don't you ask the Jews? Maybe they can figure out what it says in the scroll. They asked the Jews, and one thing led to another, and they discovered this was the work of Rashbi, whoever it was, and then it became famous. It was revealed to the world, the works of the Zohar. But this is a relatively new modern discovery. What was it like for the people who lived before the Zohar was discovered, which injected all of the Tayag Mitzvos, all of our understanding of Chamishah Chumash Torah, and the ways that Kadosh Baruch Hu conducts the world with the Sisrei Torah? Now, on the other hand, you can't go to the extreme and say they didn't know from Kabbalah, because I'm going to show you now there were four major works of Kabbalah before this period of time, and it's in the famous Gemara. The Gemara talks about learning Maisa Merkava. A famous Gemara talks about how many people you could darshan among. So the Gemara there says that you should not darshan. I have the Gemara here. Here it is. It's Gemara himself. Chagiga, ein darshan loy b'maisa bereishis b'shnayim. If you want to talk about maisa bereishis, you darshan b'shnayim. V'loy b'merkava b'yachid. Ela imkein hu chacham u'mevin midaita. You have to be a bal madrega. So obviously, Kabbalah was known. So when you deal with the Rambam and you deal with people in his league in that kuf of time, even though they make no mention whatsoever of Sifrei Kabbalah and these Kabbalistic things which we find that appear in what we call today the Zohar, obviously it was known to them and it influenced their thinking. But they don't write about it. But let's put aside the Rambam. The Rambam was a special, because the Rambam, he had Ruach HaKodesh. But what about the average man living in the time of the Rambam? The Rambam was the Rambam. So we don't really know. The Rambam, there are stories and legends about the Rambam, about his Yir Shemaim and his Koyach of Kedusha and his Ruach HaKodesh, and he knew certainly Maisa Merkava, no question about it. But what about the average man living during the time of the Rambam? He didn't have Ruach HaKodesh like the Rambam. And he was not under the influence of Sifrei Kabbalah like we are today.
You look later. You look at the Ramban. He keeps on saying Le'yodei Chen.
The Ramban is X different.
Right.
The
he only says certain people.
Certain people. Right. Exactly. So that's the point I want to make. That's what's very curious, and it's very hard to understand. I think we don't relate to what was like. That's what it's really. Before 400 years ago, everything is a very big mystery. You notice all of our minhagim, many of our minhagim start about 400 years ago with the discovery when the Ari HaKadosh was megaleh to the masses the Zohar. A lot of the Sisrei Torah were injected into our daily lives, and we became heavily influenced, not even realizing it, from the Sisrei Torah. What was life like before it? So you want to deal with the Ramban and the Rambam and the Gedolei HaRishonim. Of course, they knew these things. We have to assume. They allude to it. There are other Sifrei Kabbalah. But let's not focus on the great ones. Let's focus on the average man. What would we, the average man, be like today if we just had a basic Shulchan Aruch and we absolutely had no knowledge of what it says in what we call the Zohar? How would we live? We wouldn't know anything about the different names of Malachim.
You know, make it a little more appropriate. Let's say 500 years ago, before there was the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
How did people live?
Yeah. Shulchan Aruch, exactly.
They didn't have a Shulchan Aruch, they had a Rav. The Rav told them the Minhag.
But they basically had Baal Peh B'Mesorah, the rules of the Shulchan Aruch. It wasn't formally codified, but it was known. These are the rules.
You live by the rules.
But we today, we know when you wake up in the morning, Elokai Nishamosh Nasatabi Tahiri Atovir Asato Yitzarton Tatanifakhtabi. Everything that we do today, we're so far gone. We can't walk Dalit Amos today without the influence of the Zohar. If we would take that, extract it, remove that from us, what would we be like? Well, that's what they were like, except for the Gedolei Yisrael. There were exceptions. it's impossible for us to relate to them. And I think for that reason, that's why so much we completely block out of our minds. We have no understanding of how Jews lived before this period of time when the Tsar became part of the common man's dealings with the Torah mitzvah. So yeah, this is just a thought which came to my mind. Now, someone here mentioned, I want to point out, this mentioned the idea of Hod. Why did this week, particular week of Hod, Shabbat Hod, Lag BaOmer, have to do with Sisrei Torah? So it's a pasuk. The pasuk is a very important pasuk. It's pasuk in Yeshaya. The Mekubalim, they referred to the fact that from the time that Rashbi died until it was revealed was approximately 1,000 years. By Hashem, 1,000 years is one day. Right? It's one day. Let me find the page. Give me half a second, please. Having difficulty finding the pasuk in Yeshaya. All right, I can't find. It's going to take me too long to find. It's based on. Okay, the word hod is the opposite of the word dava. Okay, this is the gist. I can't find the pasuk. The word, there's a word dava. Dava means tuma, means a nida. Dalid vav hey. The pasuk says that for 1,000 years, for one day of Hashem, the world will be shomema, in a state of dava. Okay, that's the loose translation of the pasuk in Yeshaya. It will be in a state of dava for 1,000 years. Hod is the opposite of Dava. When the world now left, was removed from that darkness of not having any knowledge of the secrets of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are leaving this matzav called Dava. Dava means contamination of a nida. The opposite of Dava is Hod. The letters are the odds. A lot of them, when they talk about Hod Shabbat Hod and the significance, it's connected, linked directly into the extreme opposite of Hod, which is Dava, and that opens up a new avenue in understanding the relationship between Sisrei Torah and contamination. Now, I'll just tell you another quick vote I heard this week from Rabbi Shur. He said a very interesting vote. He says, why is it called Hod Shabbat Hod? What is the word Hod? Hod means to admit, to acknowledge. When a person, Yehuda, said, when Leah gave birth to Yehuda, she said, "Hapam odes Hashem, I will give thanks to Hashem. Hashem has given me more than I deserve." Hodah. When a person is thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a very wonderful thing. But a person also takes pride in the fact that he has offered thanks to Hashem. You think about it. If you present an award to a politician and you do a very good job, what have you done? You've given the person recognition. But what else have you done? You also, when you walk home that night, you feel very happy because I have done something good. You take pride in yourself that you have given someone recognition. Giving recognition is hot, hapam ode es Hashem. But in every time a person gives recognition, you also have some personal agenda. There's also some satisfaction that I've done something good, and I will receive reward in the next world for the good that I have done by expressing my appreciation for my friend. When you double it, hod shebe hod means even that I don't take for myself. I want to be anonymous. I want to give you $1 million gift to show my appreciation, and I don't want any credit. Not only is it a hoidah, I apam ode es Hashem, it's what we call hod shebe hod, the satisfaction that I would ordinarily have that I've given you credit, I give that satisfaction to you as well. It represents the complete selflessness of Hodah. That's why it fits very well with Lag Bomer being the day when the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. The reason why they died was because Shaloi no Hagu Kovet Zelazeh. So you know what? I'll give you Kovet. I'll give you Kovet. But when I give you Kovet, I also get Kovet. People are going to say, what a great guy. Look what a Izel Mechubot HaMechabet. If he gave a person such Kovet, it shows that he's a good person. Even that I don't want for myself, because that also takes away from the true Kovet I want to give you. That's why it fits very well to be Hod Shebehod. Okay, Hod Shebehod.
It shows you how distorted that they burn an effigy of another Jew.
I read about that. Okay, let's not go further. Okay, so this... Let's just talk about before the Sefer Zohar appeared on the scene. This is a very important yisod. There were four sfarim that were of Kabbalah. Let me tell you the four. So you probably heard of them, and just good to put them in perspective. The first sefer was called, if anyone want to guess, Reziel Hamalach. Hamalach. There's something called Reziel Hamalach. Now, what is Reziel Hamalach? Now, there is a tradition that it was written, it was given to Adam HaRishon on the sixth day of creation.
It was created.
Adam was created on the sixth day, but Adam did not write it. There was a Malach who didn't actually write it, but gave it over to Adam HaRishon on this sixth day. It is the oldest Kabbalistic work on record. Reziel Hamalach. Now, one thing we can be absolutely certain, we do not have today the Sefer Reziel Hamalach. What they sell in Eichler's is not the real thing. Okay, it's well documented and accepted that the Sefer Reziel Hamalach has been tampered with, and has been distorted, and has been corrupted, and anything that it says there is not trustworthy, or almost everything that it says there is not trustworthy.
You don't understand what it says there
anyway, but even if you'll try to figure out and make whatever sense you can make out of what it says there, it's more likely corrupt. It's been tampered with. It was a work. It is the earliest source of work that was transmitted, and seemingly the Zohar, the later works, are using concepts that were originally present in this thing called Reziel Hamalach. It says in the Sefer, this is also a question, this was added later on, is that if you have the Sefer in your home, it's a skula, there won't be a shmir, shouldn't be a fire. Okay, how true is this? We don't see the people. When I grew up, I never saw in my circles, I never saw people running out to go buy a Sefer. Listen, you're not going to tamper with it, but if you have in your house, you're obviously not going to take it out of your house. But okay, there's a little bit of people going a little bit too far with segulas. That is definitely questionable. Now, the next sefer that came along, which made its appearance on the world, is a sefer called the Sefer Yetzirah. Now, the Sefer Yetzirah, we don't really have what it says, but it appears in the Gemara. The Gemara often refers to the Sefer, it actually says Sefer Yetzirah. The Gemara, I'll give you one example. The Gemara in the Sechta Sanhedrin of Samach Hei, Rav Chanina, Rav Oshaya, Haviyasvi, Komali, Shabbos, Viaske, B'Sefer Yetzirah, Ferish of Gemara. They were Oisek, they saw that obviously they had it. They had it in writing, not Mokhok, could be they had an oral tradition, they memorized what actually it says. And with the Sefer, Umivru, Luhu, Igla, Tilsa, they would create a golem. They created an agal, they carried a calf. Okay, the Gemara talks about Omar, Rava, Iboy, Tzadiki. If Tzadikim want Beru, Olma, they can create worlds. Okay, they're doing different stories that with the Sefer Yetzirah you can create a golem. I'll just tell you a quick joke, is that today's Rosh Yeshiva, some of today's Rosh Yeshiva are greater than the Maral. Much greater. The Maral only made one golem. The Maral only made one golem. It's a question, did he really make a golem? Dr. Lyman proves conclusively that he did not make a golem. It was a story for children. He went to Canada. He found the documents. He found something that no one ever discovered. It was never written as real. It was just written as a story for children. The Maral, he made one golem. But some of today's Rosh Yeshiva, it's not a suffix. They actually produced many golems. They produced many golems. But the point is, Sefer Yetzirah is recorded in the Gemara. Now, who wrote Sefer Yetzirah? So there is a fascinating write-up from Rav Sadia Goin. Okay, Rav Sadia Goin says, tradition has that it was written, it was composed by Avraham Avinu. Okay, it's much later. Avraham Avinu appeared in the year 1948. Okay, that's 1,948 years since Sefer Ezekiel. It's the second Kabbalistic work that appeared in the world. It took 1,948 years until a new Kabbalistic work appeared on the scene since Ezekiel HaMalach. And Avraham Avinu, he composed it, he wrote it, he compiled it, and it was handed down from generation to generation. And do we have it today? Not necessarily. Anything that you'll go and you'll find Tosef Yetzirah again, a lot of it has been lost, and it's questionable if it is fully accurate. Okay, the next Sefer that made its appearance is what's called Sefer Hecholos. No, sorry, Sefer Habohir, I'm sorry. Sefer Habohir. That's the third Sefer. The third major work, Sefer Habohir. Who wrote Sefer Habohir? It was written by Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. The famous Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana.
Wasn't there a sefer before that of the refuahs that was gunners by one of the Malka Yehuda?
That was Sefer Refuahs.
Right.
That was by Chizkiya. Wait. This is Sefer Habohir in between. Okay, it's not a Kabbalistic sefer. That appears to be a sefer with, they had the science of the time, medicines. Maybe we're going to say it's some shemos and demons, so maybe that was based upon, it could be it was based upon Ezekiel HaMalach or Sefer Yetzirah. I don't know, maybe they used it to create refuahs. I hear the question, I don't know the answer. He doesn't mention it. He doesn't hear, when I've seen, he doesn't make any mention. But the third major work appeared as Sefer Habohir. The author of Sefer Habohir is Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana was the Rebbe of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha and the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. He was before that. He was an early, very early Tana. An early Tana, he was a Kabbalist, and he, we say this in davening many times, Ona b'koyach gedulos Hashem mincha tater, we say it Friday night before, we say l'chadodi, you say it every, say korbanos, you say it every single day, you say Sfiras Omer, you say it, it's a very Kabbalistic collection of words, and it's based on Kabbalah, but in addition, he wrote Sefer Habor, and it's quoted a lot of he writes over here in the Bible, HaSefer Kefish Shul Lifoneinu, we have it. What do we have today? He Ma'at HaKamus, it's extremely small. Most of it is lost. Same exact thing. These Sfarim completely have disappeared. We don't really have it. He basically writes, we don't care. This is the third. Now, the fourth Sefer that made its appearance is called Sefer Hecholos of Chambers. Who is the Mechaber of Sefer Hecholos? Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. And could be also Rabbi Akiva was also influenced from this Sefer poem, composed part of it. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, and he was a Talmud of Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana, so it's the next generation. The Sefer Hecholos has very mystical things. Some of it we do have. And it's written in Lashon, written in Lashon Kodesh, part of his Lashon Aramis. Okay, so these are the four major works of Kabbalah. Ezekiel HaMalach, Sefer Yetzirah, Sefer Habohir, Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana, and the most recent is Sefer Hecholos. Most of them we really don't have. And whatever we have is subject to discussion if it's really authentic or it's been corrupted. Then comes along the Zohar. The Zohar, again, we have a tradition, was written by Rabbi Rashbi. It was revealed on the day that he died. Somehow, some way, it was put in writing and this disappeared for over 1,000 years. It was revealed in different legends exactly how it was revealed. There's a tradition, we have the Muna, that the concepts do come from him. It has 14 parts. These 14 parts also incorporate chunks of Sefer Hecholos, Sefer Yetzirah, Sefer Habohir. I don't think it incorporates Ezekiel HaMalach. I don't think that's part of it at all. But at least it does incorporate. It does incorporate everything. Again, 14 major parts. The tradition is one of the Gedolei Yisrael, the Shalshalas HaKabbalah, who's also an early Rishon. He writes that the tradition has it that Sefer HaZohar and Rashi, he wrote really on Chof Dalet Sifrei Tanakh. Most Sefer Zohar is a parish on Chumash. People don't even know that. It's a Sefer, it's a parish on Chumash. And it's just rearranged in a different order. But the tradition has that Rashbi, when he revealed the Zohar, he wrote a parish or revealed a parish on the Chof Dalet Sifrei Tanakh. They have all been lost from us. Completely disappeared. Only thing that we really have left is from Chamishei Chumshei Torah. So most of the Zohar has been gone. It's been gone. In the modern Zohar that we have today, which has basically been a work in progress, it's been rearranged in different orders, and it also has incorporated the earlier works of the Sefer HaBor, Sefer HaYecholos, Sefer HaCholos, and the Sefer Yetzirah. Now, interesting, exactly 100 years ago, okay, it's amazing, Hashgacha Prat, this is exactly 100 years ago in Yemen, in Taman. In Taman, it appears there was a group of people, and they had a lot of influence, it appears, that questioned if the Zohar was really authored, is really authentic, if it really was authored by Rashbi, if it's Bechlal, it's just the Bava Maaseh, someone came along and made up this entire thing. This took place over 100 years ago, and this was a very evil collection of people, it appears, who tried to discredit the authenticity of the Sisrei Torah. 100 years ago, all of the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael and other parts of the world, they came together. He has over here a list. They wrote a letter, very, very powerful. He has the exact words, the letter. He has the whole record, and he has all the people who signed it, and he has a short biography of every single person, everyone that he knows. We can research, which was almost all of them, who they were, who signed this letter, coming out with a very, very strong curse and cherim against this group, which appears to have had major influence upon people living all over the world, to discredit the authenticity of, or our emuna, not necessarily exactly who wrote it, but the emuna pshut that we have, that the Zohar is emes. What it says in the works of these 14 sections of the Zohar, what it says there is authentic and it's emes. And the date, it was Shvat, I think it was Hei Shvat, Tof Shin Ayin Dalet, which is basically exactly 100 years ago. He has the letter and he has the entire...
This is Tof Shin Ayin.
Tof Shin Ayin Dalet. This is Tof Resh Ayin Dalet. Exactly 100 years ago. Okay, then he has other things. He talks about that for many years after the Zohar was revealed, there were many Gedolim that tried desperately to suppress it. They felt that it was not for the Hamoin Am. It's not something which you can go to Eichlos and just buy a copy of the Zohar, because many people were getting swept away and focusing on the wrong things. Then he writes, there came a point in time where everyone got swept away with it, and he has here a collection of all the various, the most popular Perushim from the Kadmoinim. I think he says here there are 8 primary Perushim. I mean, today there's an art school edition already. I'm sure soon enough they'll have an English Zohar with a comment, an elucidation. Just give it some time. Don't worry. But from the...
Didn't Ari Kaplan have a one volume?
Could be. There are some recent things that have come out which are equivalent to what art school would do in English. I've seen something a couple of years ago, something very impressive. It'd be very straightforward with a very nice parish. But from the Kadmonim, from the, you know, dealing over 100 years, like what we would call the early Achronim, or even what we would call the late Rishonim, he presents here 8 major Perushim. I think the one that we are all familiar with the most is the Sulam. That's quoted very often, the Perush, the Sulam. He then goes in here to Machlokes HaPoskim, what modern day Gedolim say about the Zohar, and they basically say, stay away. The circles that we are familiar with, you have plenty.
His father was expert.
Was what?
The Leshem.
Well, he was a parent.
And
he doesn't quote that. That's probably more recent. Okay, but he says over here that basically we're not in a world where we appreciate these things, and we have plenty what to learn Torah Sanigla before you enter to the paradise and try to glean all the secrets of the Torah. Person should first fill himself up with the Torah Sanigla, and the Torah Sanigla is enough to keep you occupied for many lifetimes.
You should learn this until you're 40 years old.
So he talks about it. He says not necessarily what Chazal meant. Bina, it doesn't say that anywhere in Chazal. It says you have to be Arbom Lubina to have understanding. So it's understood that you should not enter into the Torah until you're 40 years old. But anyway, a person, even if he'll study Zohar Bezman HaZeh with all of his might, he'll never really come to fully fathom what it means. So you don't doesn't have to be 40 years old. If you want to peek and see what it says there when you're 10 years old.
The
Sefer Torah. The Gro later in life only learned from the Sefer Torah. He didn't learn from, he only had a Sefer Torah in front of him, and he read from the Sefer Torah. And from reading the Chumash, he right away knew Kol HaTorah Kulo. It reminded him of everything that he learned his entire life. But But he quotes here a number of sources that we are not, in our generation, it's not something which among us focused on.
What people did.
Yeah. Some people did. It's impossible for us to relate to them because we're brainwashed.
Until you were 40, yeah. You weren't a Muslim. You couldn't get smicha before 40.
You're 40 years old.
So before 40, you couldn't touch the Zayah because the Zayah was only, let's call it a hidur in the mitzvahs after you did...
A child today in first grade is brainwashed with the thinking, with concepts that the Zohar has revealed.
But this is the last 150 years.
What?
Before that,
yeah.
Until you were a gadol b'tor that you were paisik,
yeah.
You didn't touch Zayah. You didn't go into Kabbalah because Kabbalah was above...
It was Nista.
Okay.
So you couldn't start until you're over 40.
Right, okay.
And it meant that 40, you weren't a balabas. You had to be a ben Torah as a
okay.
person. So the normal person was not in that situation because he worked whatever. So you didn't even start Zaya, and it take you 10, 20 years to learn it. And you're talking people, you had to, maybe you had to be 60. And you're talking about how many people lived to that, and how many people...
Okay.
So it was a very, very small subset of Klal Yisrael that was even voted.
Okay.
Today, everything has been commercialized and homogenized and translated that everyone says two words. They think, oh, Ibn Amevin was in Kabbalah, even Madonna.